Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun. Follow the Utah Grizzlies on Facebook for the latest on weekend home games and promotions, or visit utahgrizzlies.com for more. Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun.
Now's the time to plan for the 2015 Sundance Film Festival, taking place January 22nd through February 1st. Find out more by visiting sundance.org/festival. I'm John Ford, and this is Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. All right, I'm John Ford, Slug Magazine's community development executive. You can email me at johnford@slugmagazine if you're interested in advertising. In this episode, we'll be talking with Ogden's Own about their brand new Porter's Fire from their distillery up in Ogden. Our beer reviewer, Mike Riedel, chatted with Steve Conlin from the company about their new brew. After that, we'll be talking directly with Mike himself about some beer news and what you should be paying attention to when you're drinking.
Okay, so most people, when they go shopping, they want to get local brands. At least they tend to be that way. They like their local brands. And when you come across a product called Ogden's Own, you know right off the bat, you're getting a local product. How did you guys start Ogden's Own Distillery?
Yes, we are local. We are an Ogden-based company, been in Utah now for 5 years. We started in 2009 with a product called Underground, which is an herbal liqueur, kind of along the lines of Sambuca, Jägermeister. At the time, Jägermeister was the hot bar brand, and there was really nothing being made in the United States that kind of flavored profiled along with Jägermeister.
Okay.
And so we started in 2009 with that.
Well, let's back up. How did you guys even conceive of the idea of a distillery in Ogden, not let alone Utah?
Yeah, our story actually goes back way back. Tim Smith, who's our distiller, makes our products, comes up with all the flavors and everything. It was really his brainchild, and he had started in the early 2000s with this kind of concept and played with the underground flavor. You know, dabbled with ways to bring it to market, basically. And for years, he kind of had the idea floating around. It was kind of one of those stories of, you know, made it in his bathtub type thing. And then, you know, or basically a home distiller, like a lot of people have done with beer, and then gone like, hey, you know, this is a pretty good product. I'm gonna bring it to market. And so the long story short is that he and I had lunch one day, Karen's Cafe on 25th Street in Ogden, and I just kind of had him do a brain dump to me about what he knew about the industry. And I went back to my office and thought about it, and we kind of came up with a plan.
What are the challenges with coming up with a distillery? Is it breweries are popping up left and right? Is it just as easy to start a distillery?
You have some of the same hoops. You know, you're dealing with the TTB, the federal government, and the licensing and labeling and, you know, getting the operating permits and all of that sort of stuff. It has gotten easier, I believe, over the last 5 years as more people have gotten into the industry. It's become not as groundbreaking. So in Utah, we had the luxury of High West starting about a year and a half before us.
Right.
And so they had kind of paved the way. And so we kind of saw, you know, the steps that could be done, especially in the state of Utah. And now, you know, there's going to be, by the end of this year, I think 6 distilleries in the state. And so, you know, it is kind of following that path of the craft brewery. I think there's somewhere around 600 distilleries in the U.S. now. And they project that's going to be around 1,600 within 3 to 4 years.
Why do you think it took so long? Because before High West, I don't think there had been a distillery in Utah since the end of Prohibition.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. And I think it's curious because I personally was in the mortgage industry before I got into this. Been an avid drinker all my life. And I'd seen the whole micro brew thing take off, you know, from the 80s. And I came here from Austin, Texas years ago. And, you know, you had semi-micro brews like Shiner, Bock that had been around. And, you know, I don't know what the reason was. Because honestly, I think in many regards, the distillery setup may have been easier initially than the brewery model.
Do you think people think it's rocket science? Because it seems like a complex thing, distilling your alcohol down, not, you know, and not making it poisonous.
Right.
You know, is it that type of mentality?
I don't
mentality?
Think so. I think everybody thinks it's very complex to get into, in which it is, you know, when you start breaking it down and you're getting, you know, federal licenses and local licenses and distribution and all of that. It is a complex business. But, you know, like I said, I left the mortgage business when it had gotten incredibly complex, and moving into the liquor side of it from a regulation standpoint was far easier than the complexity of mortgage loans after 2008, you know. And so I think it's all relative. Not only that, it's the regulatory combined with the physical part of it. You know, you have to have lots of space. You know, you have to have sources for bottles. You have to have... It's a large footprint operation. And so when you combine the regulations with the footprint of it and with then the economic side of it and the dealing with the states and distribution, it's not the simplest business to go into when you could just set up shop and sell something down on, say, you know, 25th or downtown Salt Lake or something as a retail type company.
So you've jumped through all the hoops. We've got everything started. Underground is your first brand. Mm-hmm. You touched on that a little. Were you finding that there was a need in the market to get an herbal liqueur out, such as Jaeger?
Yeah, you know, it was a crapshoot. You know, we didn't know what would happen. You know, the state of Utah has to agree to bring your product in. And so you can't get them to agree to it until they've had a chance to try it. And you have to present it to them in complete package form and be ready to take it to the 40, I think at the time there were 41 liquor stores. And you've got to be ready to roll with no real guarantee. And right. So for us, there was some moments of nervousness when we first introduced it that, you know, we didn't know if they were going to embrace it or not. And they did. As you spoke of right at the beginning of this, people love having a local product to turn to and something to go to. And, you know, we were lucky to have something that we think tastes very good and that people really embraced right off the bat, you know, and the fact that they embraced it so quickly, and the bars and restaurants that have been supportive over the last 5 years and everything has given us the opportunity to really grow a business.
Yeah, I don't think Salt Lake. I can recall being in a bar that didn't have it on its shelf.
Yeah, there's a few, but most are very supportive in this market. I would say, especially in the last 2 years, it's really caught on to the notion that visitors want to try the local thing. And, you know, I refer back to Shiner Bock in mm-hmm. Texas. When I lived there, Shiner was a very unique product, and everybody that came to Austin would drink it. And you're seeing that starting to happen in the spirits industry, that when you go somewhere, you want to try what the local flavor is.
Local, yeah, it's all about local flavor.
Yeah.
And was there a lot of experimentation as far as getting into the right liquor to debut with? I mean, was it always that herbal liqueur, or was it
that
different
was
types
it.
Of...
Yeah, we hung our hat on Underground. The flavor and some of the ingredients were messed with a little bit. Originally, we'd had caffeine in it, and then the feds started really looking down on caffeine in a liquor product.
Right.
And so we pulled the caffeine out. It still has like guarana and ginseng and some other energy type additives, but they're kept at a very low, non-dangerous level. As a product itself, though, Underground was it. We thought, let's have something solid. Let's put all our money, our efforts, everything behind that one product and see what could happen.
And it did take off, and mm-hmm. like most good ventures, you expand your brands. And
right.
next came
Five Wives Vodka.
And that one I've seen personally on a couple of different TV shows in the background.
Yeah.
And is it just the kitschy name? Is it the label artwork? Is it the actual product in the bottle?
A little bit of everything. I think we've got a reputation for producing a real quality vodka at the $20 price point. As far as getting into the TV stuff is, we've had some art directors really embrace the label. Underground's been a lot of stuff too, but we've been in 2.5 Men, Big Bang Theory, Parks and Recreation. I haven't seen it yet, but we're supposed to possibly be in Dumb and Dumber 2. We were just recently in Gone Girl. If you watch the first couple bar scenes of Gone Girl, Underground and Five Wives are real prominent in the bar there. We've been in The Other Woman, just several. And, you know, it's never hands-on, or, you know, that's what they call it in the industry when they're pouring the drink or something.
Right.
But it's we've been lucky enough to be in the background of some stuff, and it's really fun when other people notice it, you know, and say, like, hey.
That's our stuff.
That's our stuff. And, you know, for us, it's obviously it's a good ego boost. It makes us feel good to see. But it also, it's reassuring that the people who drink our products see it and notice it, and we've become kind of identifiable to them, you know.
And it's kind of got
they
that,
get excited.
Yeah. You get that counterculture wink with the with the naming and the...
Yeah, and it's something that's good to see, something from Utah kind of growing and being big. And, you know, we have a long way to go. We're still just, you know, majority a Utah brand. But those things, you know, if they put us on the radar.
And next came, what we're mainly going to talk about now is Porter's Fire, right?
Right. So we introduced two flavors of Five Wives Vodka. We have our Sinful and Heavenly flavors.
Well, what's the difference?
Sinful is a cinnamon-based vodka, and then Heavenly is a vanilla, really rich vanilla. And if you pay attention to the industry, it's the whipped and that sort of flavor.
Right.
We're becoming very big, and so our vanilla is like a vanilla custard. It's got kind of this buttery smoothness to it that can really suffice as a vanilla flavor or in the place of like a Pinnacle Whipped type product.
It sounds really like an easy sipper or a compliment to
exactly
any backup.
Yeah. And one thing we do in all our products, including Porter's Fire, Underground, the flavors, is there is a real tendency for sweetness in products. So if you take Fireball or Jägermeister, for example, they have 106 or 108 calories in them. If you take a shot of vodka, pretty much any vodka across the board, it's 64 calories. So 30 calories roughly, or 40 calories, I'm sorry, in those brands is just raw sugar.
Mm-hmm.
That's going down your throat there. And we back off the sugar in any product that we make considerably. So Underground, for example, has 80 calories, and it's 5% stronger in alcohol.
Yeah, so, you'd never imagine that it's that low.
And yeah.
Maybe it's just a trick of the tongue because there's so many flavors going on there.
Yeah, and I think what happens is when you take in sugar, it coats your tongue immediately. My theory is that sugar blocks some of the complexity of the flavor. So we back off the sugar so that you're getting the flavors instead of just, you know, a straight dose of sugar. In comparison, like our Five Wives Heavenly or Sinful have about 76 calories in it. So only, you know, 12 calories associated with sugar. We've backed off the alcohol a little bit on those products too, so that saves in some of the calories too. And that brings us to Porter's Fire, which...
which is a little different from the others because the others have a clear liquor base.
Right.
Versus Porter's Fire, which, as I understand, is a whiskey blend.
It is.
And so why don't you go into some background, because I know most blended whiskeys tend to be Canadian in nature.
Right.
Is that your inspiration there? Or?
Well, we do use a Canadian whiskey. Basically, we're not going to, you know, mince anything here. Fireball, which is a cinnamon Canadian whiskey blend,
right,
is the biggest bar brand in the country right now, by far.
Is it really?
Oh, it's huge. When we introduced Underground, they sold minuscule amounts. I can't even start. I mean, they were barely on the radar. And now they outsell Jägermeister nationwide. And so we recognized that there's a marketplace for that type of product. It's the numbers are staggering. They are the biggest, hottest brand, no pun intended, out there right now, especially in the bar arena. To give you an idea, at the peak, Jägermeister sold about 1,900 cases a month in the state of Utah. Fireball selling about 2,300 to 2,500 cases a month. Jägermeister's dropped down to about 1,100.
You just see that as evolving palates, or is it just a trend?
I don't know. We like to joke that Jägermeister was a trend, and it lasted 30 years. You know, and so how do you? I don't know how you decide or where you make that call, right? But based on the numbers, Fireball is just, it's the place that you have to be. It's a smart place to be in a local market if you don't have a local product. We don't see Porter's Fire as something that's going to be nationwide or anything, but it's something we see that works locally. But you never know. You never know. And the reason why I say that is because when you go into the flavor of Porter's Fire, it's much different than Fireball. Fireball has that red hot tamale taste, kind of like a red hot candy. Or
it's got a bit of a sear on the tongue, right?
Yeah, and it tastes like Wrigley's gum, mm-hmm. you know, Big Red or whatever. Again, we've toned back the sugar a lot. We've beefed up the cinnamon, and we've given it a little hint of vanilla. And then it's got the Canadian whiskey in there. And it's just, people drink it, and they're just amazed how smooth it is. It's not, it's just not Fireball. It's much better. But people who like that Fireball taste don't usually have an alternative. So that, as we've gone, started introducing this, and just in the last 3 weeks, we're finding that people love the fact that it's different and that it's not the candy, which is what Fireball's been.
Because I guess it's important to make sure that you maintain the base liquor with the added flavorings. You want to be able to taste the whiskey with the accented cinnamon, right? I mean, you want a full experience.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I don't think Fireball does that at all. I don't know that you can taste whiskey in Fireball. I'm not a huge whiskey drinker personally, but I can do a shot of Fireball and not be offended by the...
Yeah.
Yeah, the whiskey that's in it, you know. I think we're borderline on the amount of whiskey you can taste. It's not mm-hmm. a full-blown. You're not getting a bourbon taste coming through or
right.
anything. We have designed it to be tasty. I mean, that's the best
way
to put
it. It needs to be approachable.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, and it's more than approachable. It's really good. And I'm not a big cinnamon fan personally. When we started introducing it, I was, in my line of work, you find yourself people wanting to do shots with you. And it's like, all right, I'm going to do this. And it's totally non-offensive. It's just a smooth, tasty. A lot of people are just drinking it on the rocks to sip it. What I was going to say is I started calibrating people's faces, you know, because I want to see their reaction to it. Because people react by having their chaser right there or something. And folks would take a shot and they just go, oh, wow, that's smooth, and they wouldn't worry about their chaser. There's no grimace on their face. It's just it's funny, you know, your beer background is, and I'm a beer drinker myself, you learn to like the taste of beer. But when you think about spirits and in the general, like, think about tequila. Tequila doesn't taste good. That's why you add lime and margaritas, you know, you make drinks
right.
out of it. You add sugary stuff to kind of make it taste better.
Base liquor is going to be difficult for a lot of people because
yeah.
they have such, you have the burn
yeah.
that you don't have with wine and beer.
Right.
And that can be a little off-putting to some people trying to pick out flavors that people know they may or may not like.
Right.
And I think this trend of flavoring liquors is introducing people to types of beverages that they may not consider trying.
I think that that's exactly what's happened in, especially in the bar setting. And a product like Fireball or Jägermeister took something that's normally most people don't like on its own as a shot. You know, taking a shot of whiskey or taking a shot of tequila or even vodka, you know, if you think about it, how it's characterized in the movies or something, it was something you kind of manned up to do. You know?
Right. Puts hair on your chest.
Yeah, exactly. And now with Jägermeister and all these flavors and Fireball, it's actually become more of a consumer-friendly product. And so we're aware that that's the space we're playing in. And so we've tried to make it very consumer-friendly, like extremely, so that it becomes the go-to rather than... And, you know, we're competing with something that's been in the marketplace, you know, underground... is competing against Jägermeister. It's been in the marketplace 35 years or so. You know, it's hard to get that branding and imaging out of people's mind. It's mm-hmm. it's seared. But with Fireball, we're only dealing with about 4-year history on it, really hardcore. And, you know, I think we're seeing that there's some room. And the fact that we are considerably different in taste, I think people quickly get it, that they've been drinking candy for a long time.
Uh-huh. One thing people will notice, people especially that have grown up here, will notice the label as...
Porter Rockwell.
Porter Rockwell, and it's it's a good-looking label. He's got those intense steely eyes staring back at you from the bottle, and that's another play on local culture.
Yeah, and I hope it's something that transcends local culture and plays into the West, you know, and Porter Rockwell, you know, I mean, he's a New Yorker. He was Joseph Smith's childhood buddy, basically. When Joseph started the Mormon Church, they say Porter was probably the youngest convert of the initial group at age of 16. And so then he went on to go to Nauvoo and to Missouri, and then eventually ends up in Utah. He served basically as Joseph Smith's bodyguard in Nauvoo and bartender. Most people will be surprised to learn that.
And brewery owner.
And brewery owner back here in Utah once he was here, yeah, down by Point of the Mountain. But he eventually comes out with Brigham Young to the valley, and he was actually the first territorial sheriff. And by all accounts, he was a badass. He, you know, was, it depends on what sources you read, but anywhere from 50 to 200 men died at the end of his gun. And he justified it as he never killed anybody who didn't deserve killing, you know. And, you know, he spent some time in Missouri in the jail for trying to assassinate the governor, but he never was convicted of that. And his excuse was, must not have been me, because if it had been, he'd be dead. You know, I mean, he was, he had a little bit of an attitude. He's a Utah icon of sorts. We thought that, you know, we have some historical significance in all our labels, and we thought that that'd be fun one to play with.
Where can people find Porter's Fire around, I imagine, around the state or around the Wasatch Front? Or where?
Yeah, we just came out a couple weeks ago, and we're working our way into all the liquor stores, but we're in about 32 of them already, of the 44 in the state. But your downtown bars are all carrying it, from Poplar Street to Squatters, mm-hmm. and Lumpy's, Maxwell's, just Whiskey Street. Right. Everybody's been really good about embracing us. Gracie's, so all of them. Just ask around, you'll be able to find it.
And that's the best way. If you're not seeing it, ask for it, right?
Right. Even in your local liquor store. You know, right now, Utah has a process for introducing stuff, and so not all liquor stores will necessarily have it in there. But if you ask, they'll bring it.
Now's the time to plan for the 2015 Sundance Film Festival, taking place January 22nd through February 1st in Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and Sundance, Utah. Be the first to see iconic films like Reservoir Dogs, Memento, and the Oscar-nominated Beasts of the Southern Wild that have all premiered in years past. Find out more by visiting sundance.org/festival.
I'm Rebecca.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Cherry. And if you like your geek news with a bit of a twist, then you'll love
Hello, Sweetie.
Hello, Sweetie podcast brings you the latest and greatest geek news and information from an all-female panel.
We'll bring you the most recent information about movies, TV, comic books,
video games, roller derby, pop culture, and more. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
For your weekly dose of geek culture from a female perspective, tune in to
Hello, Sweetie.
I'm here with Mike Riedel, our resident beer reviewer.
Hey, John. It's really nice to meet you, man.
Welcome to the program. I hear you have some beer news for us.
Man, that's pretty much all I do with my spare time is just look into beer and what's happening with beer around the state. And coming to the end of this year, I tell you, there's so much going to be going on in 2015. We're just going to be like kids in a proverbial candy store as far as...
Well, that sounds good to me.
Yeah. There are, believe it or not, there are 20-plus brewing operations going on right now in the state. Coming up in 2015, we can look forward to at least another 5. I'll kind of go over some of what we've been able to identify as being on the way and some of which is still in development.
Nice. But are these expansions or brand new places?
These are brand new places. These
amazing.
Be offering new brands, high and low alcohol. It'll probably cover the gambit on what beer can be and in this market. So we're going to start, we'll probably work our way north. One of the more interesting places that's going to be coming around is Provo's first brewery since Prohibition.
That's impressive.
That is really impressive, and that's a long damn time.
Indeed.
Now, these guys are, I guess I'll call them hippie brewers. They've got some really crazy, out-of-the-box way of thinking beers. They're going to be making beers mostly with local ingredients. They're working on a technique called sun baking, which I guess is really how it sounds, letting the sun treat the water.
Interesting.
And there looks like they're going to mostly concentrate on higher alcohol brands. And these are not going to be beers that you're normally used to finding in the stores, pale ales, IPAs, wheat beers. These are going to be really different, crazy beers. So look for these guys. They were going to hopefully try and be online in December.
Mm-hmm.
Probably won't be happening till mid-next year.
And with crazy, are you talking flavors? Or?
Yeah, I'm talking style-bending beers. Mm-hmm. Beers that, you know, you may take a pale ale, which is normally a malty, hoppy beer, and they may take it and add vanilla or coffee. You
Interesting.
Know, things that you normally wouldn't think of, really kind of culinary-type beers.
Yeah, I've seen a few things like that from Avenues Proper, so this will be interesting.
And it's that's just the way... the way things are right now. Everybody's trying to get more creative and trying to get outside the box. So look for Maple Mountain, probably mid-2015. Now we'll move up to Park City. An attempt up there to create a massive brewing concept. And these guys are called Mineshaft. What they're trying to do is they're trying to come in not just into Utah, but into the nation. And they want to create brands that will encompass not just one or two packaging brands, but come out with beers, ciders, Perry's, which are kind of pear ciders, and not only enter the market big with those, but put them in multiple packages, 22-ounce bottles, 12-ounce bottles, 15-ounce cans, 12-ounce cans. All that is pretty ambitious, and they haven't really done anything yet as far as putting shovel to ground, I think most of the other breweries, but it's a pretty ambitious endeavor, and I think it's going to be, if it takes off, it'll probably be one of the more unique concepts in beer in the United States. Now we'll get into some of the breweries that are actually, as I said, shovel to ground. They actually have stainless steel in the buildings, and they're getting ready to make beer. The first one is Park City Brewery. They're located up in Summit County, kind of in between Jeremy Ranch and Kimball Junction.
Okay.
These guys, they've got their brewing equipment in-house, and they're shooting for an opening of mid-December. So they're getting pretty close.
It's good timing with the holidays.
These guys are going to come out with four basic brands to begin with, and this is a production brewery, not, you know, different than a brew pub.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be looking at doing like a brown ale, pale ale, IPA, and I believe a Kolsch beer. These guys kind of really slid under the radar. I try and keep myself pretty apprised of most of the happenings going on.
Of course.
They really slid in. I mean, they were pretty much getting their equipment by the time I was just hearing about them, which is pissing me off. But these guys, they're committed. They're going large scale. If everything goes right, you could be trying their beer by Christmas.
It's very good.
Keeping on going. There's a home brewer out in Draper, and if you've ever met Brian, you've immediately fell in love with his beers. He's a very meticulous home brewer, and he's got stuff coming out of his kitchen that rivals a lot of the breweries you visited.
Really?
And he came up with, you ever been on the internet, and you're looking at stuff, and you're thinking, wow, I would really love to have that brewing equipment. And most people would say, well, yeah, maybe someday. Well, Brian made a call.
He's got all that equipment.
He made a call. Talked to a guy, flew out to the East Coast, bought the stuff. They closed the brewery down that day, fired everybody, said, here, take it. He had to take it apart, got a U-Haul, shipped it across the country with his wife in the U-Haul, shoved it in his garage, and said, basically, I guess I'm starting a brewery. And that's pretty much where Two Row Brewing comes from. And this is located out in Midvale, out in the 300 West area of Midvale, off of 7200. And Brian's going to take his passion, and he's going to make primarily higher alcohol beers. He's looking at being operational by, hopefully, April of 2015. So that's another brewery we've got to look forward to.
It's pretty impressive with just himself there.
And a lot of this podcast listeners are familiar with Kilby Court. They're deciding to get into the beer business also.
Ah.
So Kilby Court Brewing, as it's called right now, I don't know if that's the name is going to have after
the
they
final
finally
name.
Fire up. They're going to be located out in the Granary District over there on 7th South and about 3rd West.
Yeah.
And they've got their city approval. They haven't got their other permits, and I don't know if they've gotten their equipment yet, but it sounds like they're on track to be making beer also in 2015. And that should be very interesting. They're going to have a small pub area. This will probably be, again, more of a production brewery, but they will have some food made by their
kind of like an Epic sort of setup.
Yeah, except I think they're going to be getting their food mostly from their chef.
That'll work out pretty good.
So we're looking forward to that. So that's coming in 2015. That's a lot.
Yeah,
especially for Utah. And I guess you can see how that attributes to a strong beer culture here right now.
Oh, yeah.
Things are blowing up. And nobody's going to be sinking that much money into a business if they don't think that they can probably turn a profit.
Most people pay attention to all the stereotypes about alcohol in our state when you can actually get some really good beer here. So.
Yeah, and if you look at the list of how many places around the state are making beer.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty crazy.
It's a good time to be liking beer in Utah, for sure.
I've got plenty of cans and bottles and growlers. And if I just had beer in my fridge, then my wife would be very angry. So I have to position it toward the edge of the fridge. And choose what I'm going to be drinking that week wisely.
Happy wife, happy life.
Yes, indeed.
Make your wife happy. There's a few nice beers out right now that are seasonal, some are year-round, and they'll pretty much appeal to any palate for the most part. More the more extreme, I don't know if you guys are into sour beers. If you are, you're going to love Wasatch's Switch Sour Ale.
I am. My wife's not. That's another thing, is finding one that she likes. Then it's allowed to take up more space.
All right, well, for you, Switch is, and it's a fairly complex beer. Switch is a combination of three different beers aged in port barrels, port wine barrels, with funky yeasts to sour those beers. So what we have are Wasatch's Devastator Doppelbock, placed in its own port barrel. Red as Hell Ale from Squatters, same thing, placed in its own barrel. Wasatch's Golden Ale, placed in its own. Take all these, you age them for a year in each of these barrels. They sour a little, and then they also take on some of the characters of the barrel. So they take on some of those vineous qualities from the port.
Yeah.
Take those, and then we blend them down into one beer, and the ratio is their secret. But the end product is a tart, fruity beer that is kind of like unripened fruit. You ever bite into a berry that's not quite ripened yet, and it's bracingly tart. And this is kind of what you're going to be getting. And I tell you, for the holidays, these are so refreshing, so nice. When you are all beered out, these are great beers to go to. Go to. Really.
It doesn't happen often with me, but every once in a while.
You wouldn't think, but it happens to me quite a bit. These are great to kind of reset your tongue and get you back on track.
Nice.
So look for Switch. It's out right now.
Yeah, it sounds like the scotch of beers, almost, just mixing everything together there.
They're not easy. I always say it's really hard to make. In terms of regular beers, you're almost ruining the beer. I hope I'm explaining this right. You're almost making a bad beer great. You're making a bad beer brilliant. Because most people think of sour beer as spoiled.
Yeah, the process is almost like someone screwed up and then was like, oh, what do I do now?
Yeah.
And then, oh, look what I made.
It's like,
I totally set out to do this.
This is magic, yeah. So that is a limited batch. It probably won't be around past the holidays. It's not for the timid. It is I believe a $22 bottle for a 750 milliliter. And if you like sours, you're going to be very happy with this. Too bad for your wife. What your wife might like is a new one from Epic. And this is called Element 29 Pale Ale. Pretty simple, straightforward pale ale.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's made with Amarillo hops, which will give it a nice citrus peel, piney character. So you have a nice malty bed with kind of almost a graham cracker sweetness. And then on top, and then below that, you'll get those nice citrusy, bitter notes. Balance it out nicely.
Sounds great.
That's going to be a year-round beer, and it's in cans, and you can find that pretty much in every liquor store in the state, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully, because I never dare go against the DABC, because they're their own world, and what happens in their world is
indeed
theirs. So try it. It's really nice. Try it as soon as you hear this, because pale ales are generally best when they're fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty much fresh in the can now. They're probably only, as of this taping, a couple of weeks old. So get on them fast. Our friends to the north, Boise, Idaho, one of their favorite breweries up there is Payette Brewing Company. And they came into the market at the beginning of this year, and they really took the market by storm by making a 4% beer, a Utah beer, that was extremely flavorful. And that's not easy for a lot of people to do because being from Utah, we have become really good about making beers that taste good that are low in alcohol. Generally, most people outside of Utah try and do it, and they just end up with watery beer that doesn't taste like it tastes like shit. So, but these guys came in with their Rodeo Rye Pale Ale and really hit the market hard with this nice, flavorful 4% beer that people really loved. That did so well, they wanted to see if lightning would strike twice, and they came up with their Bonanza Golden Ale, which is kind of a cousin to the Pale Ale.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little lighter in body, lighter in color. This has this very similar flavor profile. It doesn't have as big a malt body as the Pale Ale from Epic. It's a little lighter, but it does have some of the similar hop characteristics, citrus, a little more floral, and for its base, it's a little more biscuity, whereas the other one was a little more like graham cracker. A little sweetness, but a little drier. This is a 4%. Backtracking, the Epic is not a 4%. It's barely, I think it's around 5.3, so it's not real strong. It's stronger. Nice to put you in your happy place.
Indeed.
So you can look for the Payette at pretty much any grocery store. Should probably have them by now. That's what you have to look forward to right now. I suggest you go out and buy them and try them. I think you'll be very happy with those three beers. I've really liked them. You can find most of them in local bars too. That's it for what's available now. And just to kind of give you an idea of what's coming down the road, people are outside of Utah are discovering that there's plenty going on here beer-wise and that people here actually do like a craft beer. They're hammering the market. They're coming in waves. And what we have coming down the road is another Idaho favorite, Sockeye Brewing. If you've traveled around our northern neighbors, Idaho and Wyoming, you've probably run into this label a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming in with their signature brand, which is an IPA. Assuming that does well, they'll come in with more brands. But look forward to Sockeye. They've been around since the late 90s. They've done pretty well for themselves, and their beers are quite nice. Another brand coming into the market is Santa Fe Brewing, out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I believe it is New Mexico's largest brewery. And they've made their name on a coffee stout,
mm-hmm.
which is I've had a couple of times, and it is really nice. A nice stout. It's got a nice roasty char body with a nice espresso bite to it. If you love espresso, you're going to love this beer. It comes in a 12-ounce can, and it'll make you so happy when you want to have it with your tricks.
There you go. And I'm just having my morning coffee. Leave me alone.
That's what I have.
Wonderful. We've got the holidays coming up. Okay. Everyone's family's coming over. You're going to need some beer.
Go get some of these beers. You know there's stuff coming you got to look forward to, and you've got great local breweries popping up.
Indeed. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been too long.
Thanks for listening to Slug Sound Waves. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Send suggestions of what you'd like to hear on the show by emailing us at soundwaves@slugmag.com. Hit us up on Twitter at Slug Sound Waves. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine, produced by Gavin Sheehan, associate producers Alexander Ortega, Christian Schultz, and John Ford. Hey, that's me. Executive producer Angela H. Brown. Theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. Main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd. Technical design by Kay Colgan. On next week's episode, we'll welcome Jeffrey Stedman back to the podcast studio from Yelp, talk a little bit about pizza and Salt Lake City food trends.